Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. My name is John Godis, and Harsh Dave and Russell Peddle are here to talk about Game 7 of the first-round series between the Pacers and Raptors. The exciting conclusion, an 89-84 win for the Raptors. You can drop your questions for us either in the comments of our post-game show article or by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godes, J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S, and we will definitely try to get to everyone if you reach out. And you can keep up with this show on the go by downloading the Mixlr app on iOS or Android and following RaptorsHQ. We get to do more of these because the Raptors won 89-84, a game not for the faint of heart. They almost choked it down the stretch by playing a little bit passive, but they did pull it out in the end thanks to a few key plays. I don't want to get too general here because I think our whole feeling about this game is just thank God and oh my God, they actually did it. So why don't we start with talking about DeMar DeRozan, and I'll start with you, Harsh. 30 points, 10 for 32. Definitely a controversial game for DeRozan, but you can say it was a successful one because just of the results. What did you think about DeRozan tonight?
Oh, dude, we're not going to take a second to celebrate this win?
Yeah, okay. Let's take a second. Do your thing.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't really have like anything specific to say. It's just unbelievable that we're finally here. It feels like we've been waiting forever, and it hasn't sunk in. And Russell and I were talking off air, like before we got on, that you know, up until when they took the 16-point lead, like I was already celebrating. I was strutting. I was putting on the salami and cheese photos on Twitter, and I was having a good time, promising people pedicures. I was ready, man. I was ready to go. And then they took us for one last roller coaster ride. To sort of put a damper on things, to try to anyway, but I think we should overlook that, honestly. Like, they played really well today, and we finally have what we've been struggling to get. We've crossed that hump, we've crossed that mental barrier, and you know what, man, these chances don't come around in a long time. I think we've seen people talk about how what point in their lives they were when the Raptors last won a playoff series, and that being a five-game series as well. You know, this stuff doesn't necessarily come around a lot, so enjoy it, man. Enjoy it, every single one of you. Enjoy the hell out of this shit.
Yeah, I will bench the DeRozan talk for a little bit. Russell, what about you?
Oh, thank you. I thought you were never going to throw to me.
Sorry.
Oh my God!
You get your time. You can take 5 minutes here if you want. Just go on forever.
Okay. First of all, woo, motherfucker! I know we're not supposed to curse. I don't care.
That was like the A-list curse right there. So you know this is a big deal.
Oh man! Listen, I'd love to play objective analyst here, but I've been a fan of this team from the second that it existed, and I've been there the whole time, and it came along right at my formative years in developing things that I was passionate about and that I still hold on to this day. And basketball has always been right there at the forefront, and the Raptors have been there. And I've watched, you know, a very large percentage of the games and followed the team and, you know, recently started writing about them, which, you know, living out that dream. But honestly, like the times that I've thought through any type of Raptor playoff success in my head, only to be faced with disappointing loss, and after disappointing loss, to listen, we're here. It was a seven game series where for a large percentage of it, more than the majority of it, the team looked like absolute junk, and it doesn't matter. Like, it would be different if this was a team that had done anything before. But 21 years, like, we've earned the right to enjoy this moment. They have won a seven-game series. Like, I am 32 years old. I've watched this team for 21 years. And I'm beside myself. I feel like a kid. I'm just too excited. And my wife is texting me from the bedroom telling me that I'm speaking too loudly. That's how excited I am. I'm going to wake up like my small child. So I'm going to throw it back, but yeah, I'm just really happy. And yeah,
I'll work with the levels here, so you can be a little bit quieter, and we'll still work it out. Yeah, it is unbelievable, just based on the fact that I spent, you know, the last 15 minutes of the game expecting for them to, you know, do what the Raptors do and give it back and make it more stressful, and they did do that, and they pulled it out by the skin of their teeth. But all day I was just, you know, all weekend really, I was just telling people I wasn't going to. The thing I was dreading the most was having to talk to people in real life on Monday about this team and explain away something that you can't explain away, because they had, you know, this series from the get-go. And it's just good. It's good that they pulled it out. It's good that they get this chance to play a meaningful series against the Miami Heat and play hopefully a competitive series against the Heat. That's what I was most excited for this playoff run, is just to get that really competitive second round series going, because the fans deserve it. And not just us, but everyone listening too. I think everyone who follows this team deserves this opportunity to see them. And it is about you guys listening, so we'll get to everybody's questions for sure in this show, and we won't blather on too much about Game 7, because I'm not too sure there's anything in my brain forming that I think, can actually, you know, make sense of. I was leading with DeRozan just because it's the only thing that pokes out at me from the game. So let's leave him for just a moment here and talk about that fourth quarter, because it was such a seesaw event. They led by 16 halfway through the quarter, and just a few like really important plays down the stretch. You know, Lowry's layup when the Pacers cut it to six. DeRozan with some key plays. They got some steals on defense and just did enough. But in your guys' minds, like, why did they give it back? Like, what did they do to give the Pacers that opportunity? And maybe this time I'll start with Russell.
It was a little bit unintelligent, the clock management. Like, I don't know how much we're going to blame on the players and the where their minds were at with the kind of the how big the moment was, but it's important to run down a clock in a game like that where you're up and there's a time on the clock to get rid of. But they were waiting too late in their plays to set up, and they were having some really bad possessions when you can take a lot more clock in ways other than just dribbling it down until there's like 12 seconds left before you start your set. So there were a lot of instances where they got, you know, cornered into bad offensive possessions, and you know, they gave it back. So we really sweat it out, obviously, but that it didn't have to go that way. Like, okay, you don't want to like play with like 7 seconds or less type basketball, and you want to slow it down, but this is a team that did that all year and played at a slow pace, and you know, they should have been able to play a bit more within themselves, and I hate that expression, but you know what I mean. At the end, I think they were concerned too much with burning clock and not enough with playing their game and holding that lead. They got a little bit too comfortable with the lead and worried a little bit too much about the clock. So, you know, there were a lot of bad things on offense. That's what I'm pointing to there. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I had a kind of, it feels like game five all over again. I had a bit of an out-of-body experience there in the fourth, because I couldn't believe the possibility that after that 16-point lead, when Harsh was posting pictures of salami and cheese, that, you know, we could
Chuck did possibly, it first, to be fair. Chuck did it in like the third quarter.
He did. He did it like the first quarter of game six, too. So
that's
like
amazing.
I was like, dude, don't do this to us again. I mean, when it was happening, it was like I said, it was like an out of body experience. You were just like watching it happen. You knew it could happen to this team, but you're like, no, it can't happen again. It can't happen again. And if that had happened, like, I don't know what state I'd be in now. Like, I wouldn't be talking to you guys. I'd be in at the bottom of a bottle somewhere. Like, it's just, I can't imagine if that had happened.
I would have probably called off the show. No, I wouldn't. I'm devoted to this. I would have come on by myself and cried into the microphone taking for questions. 30 minutes. Yeah. Harsh, what did you see in the fourth?
Oh, man. I think when they increased that lead to 15 or whatever, like, I was in a celebratory mood, but I was also, I think people saw me tweet this, that there's a level of comedy to blowing a lead like that. Like, the level of meltdown that requires, like, the level of weakness, like mentally, that it requires to let a lead slip like that. And they were about to do it, and I found it hilarious. Like I was laughing through my tears.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way. But
no, I totally feel that. I was in the same mindset. Like this is happening. Man, yeah, it was amazing that they pulled it out. They did just enough to do it too.
But here's the thing, right? Like, sorry, just one sec. Like, a part of it was, yes, like it was unbelievable that they melted down like that. But listen, man, like I don't think we give enough credit to the world, I guess. I don't think we talk enough about, well, maybe we do, but I don't think we talk enough about the pressure that those guys were under, man. Like Dwayne Casey's literally coaching for his job in those last 6 minutes.
Important point.
Like DeRozan is fighting for his contract and fighting for his future in the city as well, right? And the city he wants to play in.
And his legacy as a Raptor, right?
Like, for sure.
He cares about that.
Definitely, definitely. And he talks about it all the time. And like even now you see the quotes coming out about Dwayne Casey talking about how nobody believed in them and stuff. And while, yes, it's not true that, you know, everybody picked the Raptors prior to the series, like it just speaks to the level of pressure that the team was under, that he felt like the weight of the world was on his shoulders. And I think it's okay. Like they overcame a barrier. Like that, the sense of relief is, you know, we talk about basketball relatively analytically and we sort of forget the whole mental psychological side of things. And I think this is like a living, breathing example of how real that side of a sport is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. The quotes are coming out right now. I think Dwayne Casey just left the podium. So, we'll try to keep you updated on those as those come in. Let's talk about DeRozan a little bit here. Like I said off the top, the 30 points on 10 of 32. Not an exceptional performance from the statistical line, but he made key plays in this game. There was some pointing out that that shot number was kind of swayed a little bit by shots that he had to take late in the shot clock because he just had the ball and he was chucking it up. But 30 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. Maybe, Harsh, we'll start with you if you can evaluate DeRozan's game.
Jeez, that was like a peak DeRozan, like ride or die, like live or die by DeMar DeRozan type game. Like I think Dwayne Casey's talked about all series that this is their dude. Like they have to trust him. Like they got this far with him and they need him to perform in order to get this far. And I agree with that to some degree. Like I think the stat line sort of belies how good he was today. Like there was a lot, yes, he forced some looks, but I also think like Corey Joseph, as good as he was dribbling into oblivion, right? You can't reliably trust Damari Carroll or Bismack Biyombo to create offense. And I get that DeRozan's job as, you know, the primary ball handler in many of these instances, he should be the one facilitating and creating offense for his teammates, but that's not really his game. And considering the limitations of his own game, I thought he did a decent job of maximizing his output, I'd say.
Yeah, what about you, Russell?
That was a really good measured response from someone who tweeted like major shade at DeMar the entire game. But
I the hot takes turn down once I get on radio. That's how it works.
No, but that sounded like I was insulting you in some way, but no, a major compliment, because I think that speaks to the game that DeMar had. That, like, you know, it's a weird way to say that, but coming from, like, I know that you have a love-hate relationship with him, and when you hate, it can be really intense hate. So yeah. To look back at a game, like, I know it myself, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but anyway, I'm a little discombobulated after the game, but it's true that if for someone like, listen, as someone who champions analytics, it would be very hard for me to look at someone who shot 10 for 32 and say that he had a good game, but it really reminds me of Kobe's final game where it was like, you know what, screw it. Like, given the moment and what it was perfect for that. And a weird thing is I look at this game, and if they had lost, it would have been because of DeRozan, but he was a large part of the reason why they won.
Exactly.
Like, whether we like that or not. If you look at his line even a little bit more, like, yeah, he shot 10 of 32, and as we covered you know, a lot of that was late shot clock, but at the same time, he missed 22 shots, so they weren't all late shot clock, some were of his own doing, but, you know, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 2 block shots, and, like, there's only one turnover. There's a lot of, I mean, yeah, I know he's not passing the ball enough, and that's the reason why, but the point is there are a lot of hustle stats in that raw box score that show you that his hands were all over this game one way or another, and like you said, it was the, like everyone was saying on Twitter, the joke of the, you know, live by DeRozan, die by DeRozan. And, you know, at the end of the day, he, the years that he's put in Toronto and to be in this situation, it's like, you almost, it almost had to go that way, because one way or another, it would justify if they didn't win and the team didn't re-sign him. You know, you look back at it, this would be his final game as a Raptor, and it was the DeRozan experience in a nutshell. But then in the same breath, they won. And, you know, a lot of those 10 made field goals were pretty timely plays. And like that, I think back to that and one that he had that was, I can't remember when that was, sometime in the third quarter, I want to say. But it was like, yeah, the impact was there. And, you know, if you want to be one of those people that looks at, you know, the constant argument between analytics and the eye test, and, you know, old school players like someone like I saw someone tweet that Barkley was saying that he thought DeRozan played a really good game, and, you know, Barkley's like, you know, your prototypical analytics suck, you can't win jump shooting type people, but then likes people who take mid range jumpers and fades away and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, so it's one of those things where, yeah, it obviously flies in the face of smart basketball, to like the type of thing that we can get now with all the sport view measurements and things with, like, you know, Morey ball and all this stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when his team needed a big bucket, he was a lot of the time tonight, he was the one providing it. And, you know, there's something in that, in a star driven league, when you look at, you know, a team's success largely comes down to, you know, like us, you live and die with your best players. And at the end of the day, DeRozan is an all-star. And if people don't like the way he plays, fine. But he is one of the team's best players. And he and Lowry, they just won a 7-game series in which he and Lowry shot like 30% from the field and 15% from three. Yeah. And at the end of the day, when it counted, they won 4 games. And they got what they got from them. And I don't, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Noam Schiller who said yesterday, he had a good few tweets, or maybe it was earlier today, about just how basketball has changed and how it seems like there's only 2 types of players anymore that we give praise to. And it's usually either small guys at the point of attack who are efficient, or stretch fours who can stretch the floor and create lanes for those guys. Like, we have very definite roles for players. There has been a lot of shift into those roles by guys who wouldn't necessarily fit them. And there is something to be said for players who just don't fit the mold. And this was one of those games. There are a lot of games where DeMar shoots poorly and it negatively affects the team. But this was one of those games where he shot poorly, but he still impacted the game positively, I feel like, for the team. And I think I tweeted something like, it reminded me of those Allen Iverson games where they needed him to shoot 40 times to win the game, and it didn't matter how many of them he made. It was just the opportunities and, you know, how he was able to create by having the ball in his hands. And with Lowry's shot not being able to go down, it's looked worse, not better, as that series went on. I think DeRozan needed to put a performance in like this one, and albeit it wasn't as efficient as it could have been, he got to the line 9 times, and he made them all. He was the plus-minus team leader for quite a while there until Indiana made their last push in the fourth quarter. So I thought it was a good game for DeMar, but definitely not quelling, like you said, Harsh, the peak DeRozan performance, because it was pretty much that. One more topic I want to get to before we get to people's questions here. And that is, just talking about the Pacers, and maybe we can talk about the Heat ahead of them. Words do you have to give to the Pacers on their performance? I know a lot of people thought this was more of the Raptors struggling with an inferior opponent, but I think the Pacers came to play. And maybe, Harsh, you can look into what the Pacers put up against the Raptors in this series.
Sure. I guess, first of all, the Raptors aren't going to face a better player than Paul George until they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So the Raptors can take some, or if they get there, but the Raptors can take some solace in that fact. Like, Paul George is amazing. Like, nobody's going to defend DeMar DeRozan the way Paul George did. And nobody's that good on offense either. Dude was absolutely on fire again today. The other thing is that the Pacers were really on point with their game plan, like every single game. Like, they know what they do well. Excuse me. They know what they do well. They have one star quality player. They have a couple of good role players, and they generate havoc. They push the ball in transition. They create turnovers, and that's their game plan, and that's their key to success. And in the three games they won, I read about how they generated, I think, like 15 turnovers a game, and the four games they lost, they were under 10 a game. So that's basically what it came down to, right? The first, you know, unfortunately for them, like the first three or four games of the series, Jan Mahinmi wasn't really up to speed. And once he came on, you know, Jonas Valanciunas' impact was sort of deterred. And you could see all these things starting to build up against the Raptors. Like, and then Miles Turner was spacing the floor well and creating havoc inside as well. They only had like three or four ways to generate offense, and they did it reliably enough to really, really get close to winning this series. So good on the Pacers. I think they maximized the hell out of their talent. And I think with George and Turner, like, this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I thought they were, you know, they performed above the standard that we set for them at the beginning of the series. Paul George is better than I ever could have expected him to be. And he's just that good. He was probably the second best player in the playoffs, in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And he deserved, you know, all that praise. He pretty much killed the Raptors on both sides of the court. And you rarely see that from anybody outside of LeBron James. So, yeah, he was massive. He was the big thing for me. And Miles Turner was the other revelation. I think he's going to be really good. He never, you know, they talked a little bit at the beginning of this game about how he might look out of place in a game seven, but he never looked out of place at all at any point in this series. He looked like he belonged for a kid. And he and Norman Powell kind of had that in common through this series. I was really impressed with Turner. Russell, what were your thoughts on the Pacers?
A lot of what Harsh said, he really covered it. But I think a big thing is that we can talk about 2 and 7 seeds and look back through the history of the league and everything like that, but the Eastern Conference had a cluster of pretty good teams, right? From two to seven, even eight, really, because you look at Detroit and they played competitively with Cleveland. Like, obviously they got swept and they were never going to, but there were some games when it was at least in question, and it shouldn't have been for a 1-8 seed with Cleveland being as much the favorite in the Eastern Conference as they were. And when it comes down to it, yes, the Raptors had 56 wins, but then there was that cluster from 3 to 7 that were separated by only 3 wins. And at the end of the day, like, if they had played the Hornets or the Pacers or anything like that, like, these are good teams, and they can perform well when given a chance to work within the parameters of what they do well, as you guys said. So the Pacers, first of all, I mean, the whole Paul George thing, how cool is it? Like, for now that we're not facing them anymore, how cool is it to see him do like an effortless 360 dunk on the break after just seeing him like his leg snap in two in front of us 2 years ago?
Yeah,
like that is really great for him, for the team, for the league. Like, that is fantastic. That I was happy to see Paul George now that we're away from the series and it's over and I can breathe again. I'm really excited to see Paul George have that back and to be someone who could, you know, contend to be a top 5 player in the league. Like, that's something. Mm-hmm. that's really cool for them. And like you guys covered too, Miles Turner, so much promise for a rookie. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on there in Indiana. And at the end of the day, you know, just like we live and die by DeRozan, they live and die by George. What I mean to say is, like, George is everything revolves around George, and they won and did well when their role players stepped up. So, you know, they look great going forward with the George Turner you know, nucleus intact, and now it's a matter of who they put around him. Like, if you don't trust guys like Stuckey and Solomon Hill, although now I guess you got to trust Solomon Hill, like it or not, then like who else are you going to put around them? Like, it's an interesting situation there. And let's not forget they were the league's third best defense. Like, there's something to that. And when he gets to the playoffs, and things slow down, and you know, that old adage that's been, you know, overdone a million times over, but the defense wins championships. But not only that, but defense wins playoff games and playoff series. So it's no surprise that they were able to hang around. Like, I don't think necessarily, as much as the focus is on how poorly the Raptors played, at the end of the day, DeRozan and Lowry were guarded by people who are top defenders at their position. And they were up against a league best defense. Like, when their big strength is their offense, is a top five offense. But I mean, if you know, if they go up against a top ranked defense, it makes sense that their offense suffered and they had to find other ways to win. So hats off to the Pacers for, you know, it turned out that they were a hard matchup for the Raptors, more so than we gave it credit for in the beginning. And the fact that, you know, the Raptors struggled, I think, as much as everyone wants to attribute it to the Raptors being the Raptors, as if, like, you know, kind of looking back at the last few years of failures, at the end of the day, a lot of the Raptors' shortcomings, other than coming from, you know, Kyle's elbow, have to do with how well the Pacers played the Raptors.
Yeah, they've got a really interesting future too. There's been some rumors about Mike Conley coming to the team. Obviously, that's a player the Grizzlies are going to try to get. But that would be an interesting addition to that team, I feel like, because then they get that true point guard. I feel like George Hill, while he runs the offense really well, is just naturally attuned to be a two-guard shooter. And then you could move Ellis to maybe be a six-man type player. But yeah, definitely, they're an interesting team, and one that it was cool to kind of get to see over an extended period of time and analyze, and you can kind of see where their future is going to be. So, yeah, hats off to the Pacers. They pushed this team in ways I didn't expect them to. So, yeah, credit to them. Let's look forward quickly here before we get to people's questions and talk about the Miami Heat. There has been talk about the fact that there's nobody on the Heat who can guard Lowry and DeRozan to the extent that George and Hill could. So, what do you expect from the Heat? They disbanded the Hornets by, I think, 32 points today. They have been able to turn it on. When they're shooting well, they look unbeatable, but the Hornets kind of exposed them a little bit with their defense in the games that they won in that series. What do you like about this matchup? I like this series. I think it'll be competitive once again. And what key things do you think people should watch for between the Raptors and the Heat? Let's start with you, Harsh.
Yeah, so I took a few notes on the Miami Heat before the Hornets Heat series, like, just because I was previewing that for my podcast. But you know, the Heat, they've really found another gear since playing small when they got Joe Johnson, who is also another notorious Raptor killer. But you know, the Heat are a solid team. They're like a near top 10 team in both offensive and defensive rating. They don't really shoot the three a ton. They don't generate turnovers. They're very old school in terms of they like their half court offense. They like operating in the mid post and the mid range, and they have a really locked in squad rotation that they use. So they run out Deng, Wade, Josh Richardson, Joe Johnson, Whiteside, Winslow, Dragic, and then, you know, sprinkle in Gerald Green or what have you. And you know, like, the big worry here is is, I guess, who's guards DeMar, and I think that's the number one question. You know, Winslow's a great defender. Wade is also a pretty good defender when he's locked in, and he should be for the playoffs. But I think DeMar can handle the lack of length there, and he's stronger than a guy like Justice Winslow. So I think he should be able to have some sort of an advantage there. We saw that over the season that he becomes quite matchup proof. What does worry me is that they do have Hassan Whiteside, and I think the pendulum has swung a little too far on Hassan Whiteside. Like, people try to say that, you know, he's not a good defensive player. You know, I would argue that he is. He is a good defensive player. There's value in terms of how he protects the rim and how he cleans up on the glass. And we saw how guys like Miles Turner and Jan Mahinmi were bothering the Raptors guards when they were driving to the paint. And I think that'll be exacerbated against the Miami Heat. So that's something else to watch for. Last thing I would say is Miami was, I think, 27th in three-point field goal percentage and 28th in three-point field goal attempts. But that has changed a lot, too, since Joe Johnson came on board. And they hit a ton of spot-up opportunities. So that's something else we'll have to watch for, especially given the Raptors' propensity to help in the paint. I think it's going to be a good matchup, man. I don't think there's the type of defensive lockdown point guard to stop Lowry from driving or Joseph from driving. And the same thing for DeMar DeRozan. What you do have with the Heat is a deeper team, a more, I guess, veteran savvy team that, you know, has, you know, cliche, but they've been there before and they expect to win. But, you know, we want marquee matchups. People were complaining about start times. You're going to be on ESPN or TNT every single game when against the Miami Heat. So this is our time to shine.
What about you, Russell?
I don't have as deep a knowledge because up until today, as Harsh, because he previewed the last series, but up until today, of course, we didn't know if we were getting the Hornets or the Heat, so I haven't really done my homework on on the matchup yet. But I mean, just thinking about it now, like, I think one thing that I've seen and I've heard in podcasts and read online and on Twitter and all over the place, like, there seems to be this idea that after seeing flaws exposed in the Pacers Raptors series, that basically whoever got through that series, Miami was going to wipe the floor with them. And I really have a hard time agreeing with that, simply because Miami to me is not necessarily, hasn't really looked like, they didn't really look like a juggernaut in that series. They did it at times, but I mean, the Hornets still took three games, right? At the and one in Miami. And as good as Charlotte is, I can't help but think that Toronto is better, despite like, listen, the series we just saw between Indiana and Toronto was a real roller coaster, and there were times where all of us thought Toronto was the worst team in the world and times when we thought they were the best. So I think the prevailing thought is that after winning a seven-game series and especially the lot of adversity they faced, especially, like, the psychological thing that we discussed earlier of overcoming 3 years of weight to get through, I don't think that Miami is a team that is going to wipe the floor with the Raptors, especially not the Raptors that have home court advantage and that are now kind of playing with house money. They've gotten through the first round series. At the end of the day, they could lose this next series, and I don't really think we're going to look back at this year as a failure. Okay, yeah. Because in winning a seven game series, they've accomplished something they've never accomplished. They're in the second round for the first time in a decade and a half. They had a franchise record for wins, and all wins, like home wins, road wins, wins against Western Conference teams, all those things, right? So this was the best season that the franchise has ever put forth. How afterwards could you look at it and go, like, well, you know, Dwayne Casey's got to go, or maybe we shouldn't re-sign DeMar. Like, I think we're past that now. Like, I know it's as simple as it could have come down to a one-point loss again for the, you know, like in the Brooklyn series a couple of years ago, and that would have made such a huge difference to the forecast of the franchise. But I mean, like, I was just reading a couple tweets talking about how Masai walked in during Casey's presser and kissed him on the head. Like, Casey's not getting fired now. Like, his job's safe. And as well, it should be too, because one thing I think that kind of grinds my gears about the whole Casey thing is, like, I think that people would have been calling for his head if he had lost this series. And he made some pretty big adjustments. He benched Scola, who hasn't played a minute since being taken out of the starting lineup. He put Patterson in the starting lineup. I know this is all, like, it could have been too little too late, but, like, you know, the small lineup that sparked the comeback in game four, going to Norm Powell for big minutes and playing Terrence Ross, like, what, three to 5 minutes tonight? Like, I don't even know how long he played, but it wasn't much. I don't have the box score in front of me. But the point being that everything that Raptors fans are like, you know, especially the heavy internet presence, what they clamor for when it comes to Casey, like, he did it in this series. So at the end of the day, a loss you can't help but pin on either the shortcomings of the Raptors or the excellent defensive effort of the Indiana Pacers. So at the end of the day, this is a team where I don't necessarily feel like they're coming out of this series as having, like, as being a wounded team I think that they're going to be better in the next series. I don't think you're going to see DeMar and Kyle. Like, Kyle, again, a lot of this is almost everyone in the world realizes that this has to be injury-based. As much as Kyle won't admit it, this has to be an elbow issue for him. And DeMar, it was a Paul George issue. So, you know, we got to imagine DeMar will play a little bit better and we'll kind of see flashes more of what we saw in the regular season that kind of brought everyone back around on him. Like, he had a fantastic regular season and we can't lose sight of that. And like you said earlier, it was, I can't remember who said it, but, you know, the Heat do not have a defender like George to contain DeMar. And if he's doing okay, then, you know, it's going to make a big difference. So I think they're going to hang with them. I think is the main point I want to make is that the last three games that the Raptors played against Miami in the regular season, they won by a combined 42 points. Now, I know you got to throw regular season records at the window, and they had a 3-1 series against Indiana in the regular season. But at the end of the day, like a super long story short, I don't think Miami presents that big a challenge that the Raptors can't overcome it if things in to win four games if all breaks right. And they, at the end of the day, they have home court advantage. They can beat Miami. There will be a Joe Johnson game. There will be a Dwayne Wade game. But at the end of the day, I don't see this, especially with the weight of having to succeed is now off their back. So I think that they can play a bit more freely. And, you know, if they succeed, great. If they don't, we're not going to all jump off. We're not all going to jump ship, you know?
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to jump into people's questions here. We're a little short on time. So I'll do this kind of rapid fire style with you two guys. So I'll get a question and then pose it to one or two of you. And I'll make a decision as a car alarm goes off in my back lane here.
Apologies for being super overzealous with these answers. It's just like we're so fired up right now.
I know. I'm going like in circles here too. We by proxy answered a lot of these questions in the last 20 minutes. So people will just have to listen back and you'll get your question answered if you listen for the nuggets in this broadcast. So we'll start there. Raps fan 1237 asked, do Raps get a game in round two? Russell, you answered that pretty well. I think I would say that they probably get 2-3 games. They can win this series. So I'm sure
they'll be favored,
won't
they?
This one. Sorry?
They'll be favored, won't they?
They will be favored. Yeah. This is a very negative question. I would imagine that they'll get quite a few games. I don't know about you.
Home court, 8 more wins this season. Yeah. I would pick them to win the series. I think it'll be a tough one. I could see it going 7 games again, like be still our beating hearts, but they'll definitely get a win in there, if not win the series.
Yeah, that ties into a question from at Elopan as well. Am I crazy for thinking they have a great chance against Miami? Russell and Harsh, addressed that too. I think they have a great chance. They should be favored. And for the reasons we mentioned too, they've got, more favorable matchups for their star players. The Heat stars can be bottled up by the Raptors' defensive specialists. I think Powell will be a good foil for Dwayne Wade, who's definitely come on the last week here. So, I think they should be favored. This one ties into what I just said. Asad Alvi tweets in, how badly is Norm going to bottle up Wade next round? So maybe, Harsh, you can address this one. Is Norm going to see the time? Is Carroll going to see the time? How do you think the Raptors address Wade in the second round series?
I think I'll be quick with it. I think you'll see a bunch of a combination of Powell and a little bit. I think Carroll and Patterson will be tasked with Joe Johnson primarily, but you'll see a lot of Carroll and Norman Powell on Dwayne Wade. I hope we don't see much of DeMar DeRozan on Dwayne Wade.
I would agree with that.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Can I be a listener and tweet it in real quick? what do you think we'll see out of the rotation? Do you think we'll see a reset, like when it comes to and stuff like that, or because we're inching towards a bit of an 8-man rotation here with the starting lineup we saw tonight with Norm, Biyombo, and Joseph sprinkled in, because even Terrence Ross was held out quite a bit tonight. Now, I mean, I know he'll still he only played 5 tonight, so I think, like, is Scola officially done for the playoffs? You think you'll see, obviously, Norm, like, even in the early goings of this series in game 3, Norm barely played, I think it was. And
Yeah.
Like, that's obviously flipped. So you think we're going to carry over what the rotation has become in the last two games into this next series going forward, or was that matchup based?
I think it actually is what people wanted to see, like, over a long-term strategy as well. And I think it makes sense, especially because the Heat have a tendency to start playing Deng or Joe Johnson at the four. And I think not just DeMar Carroll, but I think Patrick Patterson can handle that really well as well. And I think you're going to get exposed if you try doing that with Luis Scola. So I would say just stick with it. It makes sense, not only just matchup based, but also from the standpoint of that is your best team. And there's a chance that I think Terrence Ross is phased out of the rotation, and I think that should be okay regardless.
Yeah, I would tend to say that Ross will probably work his way back into more than we saw tonight. Scola might come back in with McRoberts' matchup, but otherwise I don't see how he fits into this series either, because he tend to stretch the floor with a stretch four, whether it's Deng or... Winslow's not necessarily a stretch guy, but he tends to play some time at the four. If they go to McRoberts a lot, then probably Scola sees some matchup minutes there just to give Patterson a rest. But we'll move on to the next question here from Jason Hindle. Did Norm shake Paul George? He looked shook. Russell, you take that one.
I don't think George was necessarily shook. Like, he made some pretty big mental mistakes there down the stretch, which was very uncharacteristic in this series, of course. But no, I think Paul George will be okay.
Yeah, Paul, his feelings aren't hurt. I heard he was a very nice guy. I heard he dapped up Lowry and their kids after the game. So he's obviously not that
shook. I
like
sportsmanship.
Yeah. Okay, from the comments, Mike from Down Under, do you reckon that was the Pacers just playing better, or the Raps just doing their usual playoff choke? I guess that's a fourth quarter question. Harsh, I think we addressed this earlier, but maybe you could talk back to it a little bit.
Sorry, so is the question whether the Raptors choked or whether the Pacers played better?
In the fourth, yeah.
I think there's a little bit of both. You saw what the Pacers started doing. They started blitzing every screen, every high screen. And Jonas Valanciunas just wasn't equipped to handle that. He's not really a threat that high on the ball screens. I would have liked to see Patterson in that scenario, but, you know, whatever. That's old news, I guess. No point crying over spilled milk, especially considering we won. But I think the Raptors also clearly felt the pressure, and I think it's okay. Like, whatever, it happens. Like, the Pacers are a good team. Frank Vogel makes really good adjustments. They're a good defensive team, as Russell's talked about. And, yeah, it was a combination of things. That's my cop-out answer.
Yeah, that works for me. I'll give the last one here to Russell. We are a little short on time here. It's going to kick us off in about 8 minutes. So it is from Dan Grant, who I'm hoping to get on the show for game one or two here this week. So, Dan, thanks for listening in. If you're still with us, hopefully we'll get you on this week. His question was about a comment Alvin Williams made that DeMar made up for his inefficiency tonight with aggressiveness and by setting the tone for his team. What are your thoughts on that statement? Is that where he made up the difference?
I think that's fair. I think, like, as I said earlier, DeMar was playing. I tweeted something earlier where I was saying, like, as much as we can get on DeMar's shot selection and we can, like, hold his box score up and you know, kind of die on that hill, at the end of the day, I didn't feel like anyone wanted that win, all fans and everyone playing on the team included, more than DeRozan. And whether that be, like we said, we talked about, like, maybe his legacy as a Raptor is important to him. Getting over this three-year hump is important to him. Like, he really started for, like, he played on, keep in mind that he played on the Raptors when they were, like, a 20-win team. So there was something to, as much as he thought that the way to get the team to win was for him to be aggressive, and if he had to shoot 30 shots, fine, but he, like, the team needed him to win. And whether we agree with him or not, like, it was clear that he gave a crap. Like, he gave a lot of crap. A lot of a crap. I don't know how to word that, but
he was definitely like, invested. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that trickled down. It was pretty obvious that he was leading that charge. As much, like, there were a lot of plays that I saw him make, like he had like a chase down block, which you very rarely see him do. And there was just like, I think that energized the team a lot to see him doing that. So it definitely trickled down. I think he definitely set the pace on that. I felt like he did. As much as it was frustrating at times to see what he was doing, I felt like a lot of the good parts of the game were really led by him.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully that, that give a shit meter, like we talk about, it stays high. Game one of the second round series against the Heat, it'll be on Tuesday night. Game two on Thursday, we'll get the overtime train turned on for those ones too, and get some faces in here to talk about those games after they're over. Guys, thanks for joining me. This was a good one, obviously, after a great win. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us. Honestly, I'm really proud to have been a part of this, considering the considering what the game was and how big it was in the team's history. I'm excited to have had an opportunity to talk about it. As incoherent as I admit I've been, because I'm sure people have been listening to this podcast going, say, who's that rambling old guy? But yeah, this one really meant a lot to me, so thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Harsh. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man, no worries. Thanks for having me on as well. And I hope you get to do a lot more of these.
Yeah, I do too. We will be back definitely Tuesday night and into next week. We hope you listen in for those. You can look for this on the postgame thread on RaptorsHQ.com, or you can tune in from Twitter at RaptorsHQ. You can subscribe to our archived episodes and our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, which will get probably an episode in this weekend, or early this week, sorry. That's on iTunes. You can give us a rating review there. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you to Harsh and Russell for joining me. That's HQ Overtime. Everyone, thank you for tuning in.